Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports.
The business of sports can be intimidating or hard for a startup to break into.
We really appreciate when our owners are actually there, you know, with us through the journey.
Teams, ours especially, have been very intentional to diversify at all levels of the company.
I think we're in the golden years for the NFL and college football.
Our demographic reach has continued to expand.
This is going to be really unlocking the streaming platform for sports fans.
Sports valuations are rising. We'll see when they peak.
You don't have to be the best in your sport to make a whole ton of money.
Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Damien Sassauer.
Michael Barr is off this week, but coming up on this week's show, we talk about what's next in sports venues with Tim Leiwicki, Chief Executive Officer at Oakview Group.
I think you're going to see 40 new stadiums built in the Middle East, Europe, in the UK, mostly geared towards football clubs. I think you're going to see 40 arenas built by Co-op Live. And so if you do the simple math and the average arena is 500 million euros, you're talking about a significant amount of money that's going to be spent on arenas.
Plus, we'll check out the sports scene in Salt Lake City and soccer's rise in the U.S. with the president of Real Salt Lake, John Kimble.
All that and more is on the way. But first, we look ahead to the NFL draft. Damien, it's mid to late April. This is not when we talk about the NFL, yet it somehow always shows up.
Scott, I don't know what world you're living in. We always talk about the NFL. We Jet fans live for the draft. And as Brock Bowers going to the Jets at number 10, that's what the consensus thinks. But we know for a fact we're going to see some quarterbacks at the top of the first. And, you know, it looks like Caleb Williams is going to Chicago.
Okay, hold on. You've got the MLB season starting off. You've got playoffs in hockey and basketball to take place.
Sure.
And we're still talking about the NFL draft.
Absolutely. Of course we are. This is how teams get better. This is how the New York Jets rise like the phoenix from the ashes, Scarlett.
Oh my gosh, the Jets once again. So here now to help us preview the NFL draft, plus share his thoughts on player money management, we welcome former NFL pro and athletes.org co-founder and CEO Brandon Copeland.
Thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
Doing well, mate. Doing well. So we got to talk draft. We got the NFL draft coming up in just about, a few days from now. And it looks like a lot of quarterbacks are going in the first round. You know, talk to us a little bit about what your thoughts are. I mean, you were just at that NFL workshop in New York City. Talk to us about, you know, what people are saying, what they're thinking here.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, a lot of quarterbacks, hopefully making a lot of franchises happy this year. Obviously, you know, Caleb is going number one, and you know, that'll be really interesting to see, and you know, we're all going to assume that Chicago will put pieces around him, continue to put pieces around him that can support him in his trajectory, right, in that next phase, in that next evolution. I mean, obviously with draft one, I mean, I'm even going to take it a step backwards here, because obviously we could talk about the players, but being a former Detroit Lion, coming off of the season that they just had and then now having the draft in Detroit, I mean, the city is just
buzzing.
On absolute fire. I've had so many people reach out, hey, you coming back for the draft? Hey, you coming back for the draft? So I just really want to give a big shout out to Detroit, because, you know, they are pushing for their breakthrough right now, and it's just exciting time to be a Detroit fan.
Oh, Brandon, you're selling Detroit, and Michael Barr isn't even here in the studio with us. Oh, man, he's going to be so upset to hear that. But listen, not only did you play for the Lions, and not only did you grow up in Baltimore and play for the Ravens, but you also played for the New York Jets. So talk to us about pick number 10. Everyone thinks the Jets are taking Brock Bowers, tight end from Georgia, with that selection. But, you know, one thing that I don't think a lot of people think about when they're looking at the top 10 picks is, you know, those are premier position, you know, like edge, you know, offensive tackle, quarterback, you know, you have to, wide receiver, right? You have to take like a position like that for it to make sense from a GM standpoint. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. And you know, that is not taking anything away from Brock Bowers, right? Like, if you can give Aaron Rodgers a weapon, or if you can give him somebody that can protect him and protect your weapon as a franchise, then, you know, that's definitely what you need to prioritize there. The Jets, from a defensive standpoint, I mean, you know, one, obviously their head coach being a defensive mind, but then C.J. Mosley and that team in the middle. And, you know, from a defensive standpoint, they'll be all right. They'll be able to manage. But from an offensive standpoint, you got to find a way to either, as I mentioned before, give Aaron Rodgers a weapon or protect your most important weapon this year, which is bolstering up that offensive line.
All right, so NFL fans are just bracing themselves for a slew of developments here over the next couple of days. I want to transition, Brandon, to your work at athletes.org, which is a nonprofit providing knowledge, access, and protection to member athletes to support. They're trying to understand this changing landscape of college athletics. We saw the Dartmouth men's basketball team make history by voting to unionize. There's a lot of concern or excitement, depending on your perspective, on how other schools might follow in their footsteps. What's your take on whether college players in football should be in a union?
Yeah, I think, you know, one, we built athletes.org as a players association and not a union first because, as you mentioned, right, like athletes aren't able to unionize per se, because they haven't been designated as employees across the board. Mm-hmm. So we have a flexible structure and a flexible nature because based off of our chapter model, we can have ACC men's basketball, ACC women's basketball, SEC football, SEC Olympic sports, for example. And now those chapters become the advocacy groups and the mini players associations. And if a chapter needs to unionize, they can. Right. And so we built flexibility in the structure because ultimately, to me, I understand that the biggest from a political standpoint and also a legal standpoint, the biggest conversation is about employment versus non-employment. But right, to be honest with you, the reason why I made it 10 years in the NFL is because I kept it really, really simple. And when I look at the problems we're solving at athletes.org, we are trying to make sure that athletes get a chance to maximize their platform and walk away from it with more than just memories, right?
Yeah, right.
And to be honest, we've had a couple of historic weeks, right? We've gotten our athletes represented, Power Five men's and women's basketball players, football players, and Olympic sport athletes in the room with the NCAA, mm-hmm. with conference commissioners, and with athletic directors, and we've talked about these issues. And we found out that, you know, hey, we're setting ourselves up for more impactful discussions about the future of college athletics. Mm. And ultimately, as I'd say there, you know, I bring all that up to say, you know, for me, what people are finding is, I know the conversation is a lot about revenue sharing, but, you know, our athletes are also advocating for health and safety protocols, yeah, and practice limitations and mental wellness resources and things of that nature. They're also advocating for protection as well, too. And so whether it's a union or non-union, again, I'm a little biased. I will admit that. I'll go ahead and admit that right now. I'm a little biased. I like our structure the best. But the reason why we built our structure is because, listen, me as an Ivy League football player at Penn, the issues that I dealt with are different than what an athlete from Alabama, yes, is dealing with today. And by us using the chapter strategy, it gives us the flexibility to make sure we're advocating for specific issues to those athletes in those chapters.
Thank you for explaining that. And I think what comes through is the nature of the advocacy and the need for that advocacy. I'm also curious to get your take on the NBA banning the Toronto Raptors for Jontay Porter from the league for life for betting on games, fallout from a gambling scandal. I kind of find it inevitable that someone would get caught in the crosshairs of this with the explosion of sports betting and, of course, the leagues, plural, really taking on partnerships with these different sports betting companies as well. How are you thinking about educating players, college players, even professional players, when it comes to sports betting? Because it feels like there's going to be more of these confrontations in the coming months and years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one, you know, I choose not to dive into some of those things a lot of times because it's tragic to me, mm-hmm. because, you know, you see a young athlete who is losing their entire livelihood and career for a split decision. And, you know, rightfully so. I mean, the integrity of the game is the most important thing to the fans and to the other players that are playing with that athlete, right? And so I will admit that I have not dove into all of the information, so I'm not going to speak super specific about it. But ultimately, there is a job that we have as athletes.org and as players associations to educate athletes on, you know, the long-term win versus the short-term win, right? It's almost an investing principle to a certain extent.
And, huh, good way
and yes, as you mentioned, yeah. It is the most popular thing in the world right now, fantasy football and all the different betting lines. And now if you just turn on regular ESPN, you see betting lines all up and down the screen. And so it's only going to become more and more prevalent when everyone else in the world can do it, but you can't. But again, we have to make sure that we're increasing the amount of education around it so that we can make sure that we don't see, you know, budding careers end over things like this in the future. Because it, to me, again, it is definitely tragic.
All right, Brandon Copeland, thank you so much for joining us. Brandon Copeland is founder of Copeland Media, also co-founder of athletes.org.
Thank you for having me.
Speaking of the NFL and the draft, the latest episode of The Deal with Alex Rodriguez and Jason Kelly features a former third overall pick and likely first ballot Hall of Famer, one Mr. Larry Fitzgerald.
In this episode, they talk about Larry's career, life after football, the secrets of investing, and how Arizona won his heart.
Let's listen to a portion of that conversation about how Larry's used his status as an NFL star to dive into business.
I think sports is really unique. There's not many businesses where, you know, you go, you know, to New York and, you know, it'll be very difficult for, you know, a financial advisor on the fifth floor to go upstairs and talk to Jamie Dimon and have a conversation with him. Like, it would be difficult, you know, like, but you can do that in sports. You can go talk to, you know, Mark Lazarus, you can go talk to, you know, Mark Cuban, you know, some of the most successful business people in the world. You have direct access to them. And so why you would not utilize those opportunities makes no sense to me.
Larry, another thing we have in common is the NBA. Mm-hmm. But it's ironic, right? Because we've been talking about Magic, both of our mentor.
Yeah.
And he played basketball and owns the Dodgers, right?
Yeah.
You played football and you were part of the Suns. Yeah. And same with baseball and Timberwolves and Lynx. When an opportunity like that comes, how does it come? How does that meeting? And like, how do you think about the process of like, I got to write a big check and you only have so much capital.
Yeah.
Walk us through that process. How do you think about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I never really like set out to like being the NBA. That's not nothing I was ever like really thinking about. But I just built a relationship over 10 years, you know, with the majority owner. And, you know, one day we were sitting at dinner and he was just like, "Hey, Larry, I would love to have you a part of my group. You know, you're really thoughtful. You're insightful. I mean, you have great recommendations and this and that." And I was like, "Wow, that's interesting." And then he said, "You know, this is what it's going." And I said, I kind of gulped on my water. I'm gonna have to get back to you on that, you know. But it, you know, it's a decision that I really am thankful that I made.
That is former NFL star Larry Fitzgerald speaking with Alex Rodriguez and Jason Kelly in the latest edition of The Deal.
Check it out on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Television. Stream it on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Originals and find it on your favorite podcast platform.
Up next, we turn to soccer and the sports scene in Salt Lake City with the president of Real Salt Lake.
What's so interesting is that I think they get here and they fall in love with our community.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu, along with Damian Sassauer, Michael Barr will be back next week.
The Arizona Coyotes are on the move. The NHL's executive committee recently approved their move to Salt Lake City, Utah.
And it's really part of a growing sports ecosystem in Salt Lake City that also features soccer with Real Salt Lake of the MLS.
Real Salt Lake with back-to-back wins for the first time since last October. And it is Chicho Arango with his crowning moment for Real.
Here now to talk about the club and the sports scene in Utah is John Kimball, president of Real Salt Lake. John, so good to speak with you.
It's such a pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
We're thrilled to have you on. And what I noticed about your background is that you're a Utah native and a veteran of the sports scene in that state. You're one of the founding executives of Real Salt Lake, and then you're president of the Utah Jazz's home arena. You're president once again of Real Salt Lake. There's no shortage of sports activities in Utah. I'm thinking skiing, mountain biking, hiking.
Golf.
Golf. Thank you, Damien. What is distinctive about Salt Lake as a sports town for team sports?
You know, it's growing. That's the most exciting thing. There's a lot of exciting things that are coming, but the Utah Jazz really kind of kicked it off with just a solid NBA presence, and then we've had our team come in as the second professional team, and we have phenomenal support from our fan base. Everybody here, you know, in our market is very athletic and very supportive. Now we've got a women's team with the Utah Royals that has just kicked off this year as well, and we have a very dominant female presence as well in the soccer world, in college in particular. But Utah's just a very active state. Olympics, a lot of different things that come through here, and we're proud to kind of be the state of sport.
And I'd love to ask you about all that stuff, including, I mean, the Arizona Coyotes of the NHL are going to be relocating to your neck of the woods. But before I ask you about any of that, talk to me about Christian Arango. I mean, come on, man. 6 goals this year, leading the MLS.
Chicho Arango into the penalty area, going one way, going the other, trying to cut it out, goes for goal, he scores! Absolute brilliance! From Chicho Arango.
He's also played 715 minutes, which is a lot. Talk to us about the team, its prospects. Talk to us about the season.
You know, it's just so exciting because we're just one of those teams that is just right at its tipping point. Last Saturday against Columbus, we just had massive possession of the game, and we were just, you know, ready to score. It felt like 15 goals, but unfortunately ended up with a 0-0 tie. It was just one of those nights, but Christian is just, you know, not only is he an amazing athlete, he's just an amazing human being. And he's come in and made our locker room solidify. He's rallied the players around him. And we really, truly have that identity of the team as the star.
You know, John, I just have to ask you that. I mean, you know, you're drawing these players from abroad into Salt Lake City, and, you know, they really do become a culture of the team, do they not?
Absolutely, because what's so interesting is that I think they get here and they fall in love with our community, and they truly just want to be here, and they want to raise their families here, and they want to create families here, and once they feel like they're a part of this community, then it becomes that passionate thing you see in European soccer around the world, where communities just back their clubs, and I really feel our players feel that once they are here for a year.
Yeah, speaking of drawing talent from abroad, I've got to ask you about Lionel Messi's impact on Major League Soccer as a whole and how that really opens the door for more talent to come in their prime, not just after they've done everything they wanted to accomplish in Europe and for their home country and then finally see the MLS as kind of their swan song.
Yeah, and if you had the chance to watch the Beckham story that's on currently, it really
Oh, that's a great, great documentary.
Yeah, and it shows you how it started with him and how he made a big choice to come here. And what it honestly does is it just absolutely legitimizes what we're doing in the United States. And it's building to what is going to be the largest sporting event in the history of the world, which is World Cup in 2026.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And to have these carpets like David Beckham and Messi rolled out to the United States to educate us, help us understand the beautiful game, and then literally to have the largest sporting event in the history of the world held in a couple of years is really an amazing tipping point for us as a as a league, for the sport in America. And I think it's going to just be a floodgate of new talent, amazing talent coming from around the world to the United States.
A quick question just to follow up on that. Do you anticipate more big international talent to come before the World Cup takes place?
Absolutely. I was just at league meetings, and that's an initiative. We want to open, you know, the gates to the world. And I think it's, you know, Messi and Beckham and others have shown that coming here is fantastic, not only for themselves and their careers, but for their families. And I think there's a lot of players that think that, you know, the United States is one of those areas that has so much growth and potential that they can really come and make an amazing name for themselves in the United States.
Well, John, as you know, and Scarlett will attest, I mean, the city of New York just approved the $780 million soccer stadium, which is slated to open in 2027. So obviously MLS is drawing the money in, right? And it must be doing well, I would think. And, you know, you're absolutely right to look ahead to Paris, right? Let's look ahead to the Olympics, the men's national team, the women's national team. You know, talk to us about Gianluca Busio. Talk to us about what we could hope to see from the U.S., I mean, in Paris.
You know, that's what I think is going to be the amazing stories here is that, you know, my expectation is they're just going to shock the world and we're just going to do the things love to do as Americans and just go out, show up and make a name for ourselves and build that momentum to 26 when it comes to the United States.
Just drinking the Kool-Aid here. And I mean, you're right. I mean, what's interesting also is when the World Cup does come here to the U.S., it's also coming to Canada and Mexico. I believe there's 16 stadiums that are going to be hosting, I mean, all throughout the country. I mean, what sort of prep work goes hand in hand with that? And how does Utah, how does Real Salt Lake get involved with that?
You know, it's really interesting. FIFA came and met with me and they asked, you know, I said, this is going to be obviously a major event. And they're like, John, you know, it was last held in Qatar. Before that was held in Russia, two places that are hard to get to. Now it's going to be in the United States, a country that, you know, gathers peoples, gathers countries, celebrates the Olympics, makes it very easy. We're going to be in 11 NFL stadiums in the United States. And they asked me the question, they said, John, where do you think Lionel Messi and Argentina stayed during the last World Cup? And I said, well, you know, if there's a four seasons, there's probably a five seasons over there, or maybe a six seasons. And Lionel Messi probably had his own floor, and it was just, you know, an amazing place for them to stay. And he actually said, John, I got to tell you, they stayed at a college, and they actually roomed two players per room, and they ate, drank, and slept soccer because they were there to win.
Dorm life.
And the reason that I share that with you is that Utah is that state. We have an amazing airport. Our training facilities are very close to the airport. FIFA is looking at us for a number of teams to come to Salt Lake City to be housed and then to get on the airplane and travel to those different cities to play their games. And we're a quiet town, and they're looking for quiet spaces because they want to be focused on winning the games. So I think we got a really good shot at hosting some amazing teams, and it just, again, kind of speaks to the accommodations and the things that we build here in Utah for global sports to come and participate in our great state.
John, I'd like to hear a little bit more about what kind of projections, therefore, you are making for Real Salt Lake as well as for the state as a whole. Given the excitement of the Paris Olympics and the excitement of the World Cup, how do you see that broadening your audience, broadening your opportunity locally 5 years down the road?
You know, it is literally the next tipping point for the sport and for our league. The first being, you know, the World Cup in L.A. when the league got started. This truly, with the games that are coming up with the Olympics and other matches that are going to be coming up in the next 2 to 3 years, are going to be unprecedented for our sport and for our league. And there's really, you know, I proudly can say there's really not that kind of trajectory in any other league that's happening in the United States where we're building up towards the largest sporting event in the history of the world, soccer being the biggest sport to be played around the world. And so with that, you know, our trajectory, we're very bullish about where we're headed, about where our team's headed, about where our league's headed, and we're focused on winning here in Salt Lake.
You know, Scarlett, have you ever seen that that pro-am they have right along Salt Lake, you know, when guys are in their boats and, like, you know, you have athletes throwing footballs to them and they're playing catch and then they're, you know, teeing off.
That sounds amazing.
It's just awesome out there. But, you know, talk to us about Black Desert Resort. I think it's, you know, PGA's, it's expected to hold a PGA event. I mean, is golf, I mean, what other sports are coming to the state of Utah here?
That's what's so amazing is in the north of this state, we host the Winter Olympics and we have these amazing professional teams. And then you go down south and arguably it's some of the best golf in the country, if not the world. And with, you know, different groups looking to bring professional tournaments down there, we're very bullish about being able to host those things. I was just down there a couple weeks ago. And it is so polar opposite from one, you know, from the north to the south. And when you go down south, it could be snowing up here in Salt Lake City, and it could be 80 degrees down in southern Utah. And just the desert and the red rock, it's just absolutely beautiful and going to be an amazing area to potentially hold the PGA.
So talk a little bit about some of the best practices that you've incorporated at Rail Salt Lake, especially when it comes to the fan experience, when it comes to the venue that anyone who attends a Rail Salt Lake game will be seeing and experiencing in the coming years.
You know, one of the things that I share with people is if you think of your top 10 memories of your life, I'll guarantee that 2 to 3 of them have something to do with sports or attending a sports venue. And so that's the way that we look at it, is that we're creating memories for people. And so when they come here, we want, from the very first touch when they walk into the building, through the whole experience, to the food, to the way they're interacted with, to be top-notch, you know, white glove, touch, anything that we can do to just make it an amazing experience. And each week, we go through our NPS scores, and we go through every complaint line by line with all of my top executives in the room, and then I assign people to call those fans back directly. Hmm. And with that practice, we've had just amazing response where people are like, wow, I've just never had a survey taken and then had somebody ever reach back out to me to ask me what I thought or gave me the answer or said they were working on it or just apologized for this situation. So I really, truly do believe it's how we treat our customers, our fans, and then the product that we're putting on the field. We are that hardworking team that nobody wants to play because we can beat any team in the league any day.
All right. John, really appreciate your joining us today. Good luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys.
Special thanks to Rail Salt Lake President John Kimble for joining us.
Up next, we head to the UK and we look at the opening of a brand new arena in Manchester with Oakview Group Chairman and CEO Tim Lywicki.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu, along with Damian Sassauer. Michael Barr will be back next week.
Oakview Group is responsible for running some of the most impressive venues around the world through their sports, live entertainment, and hospitality division, OVG 360.
It's got more than 400 venues around the world and is committing more than $5 billion to developing new arenas and venues in just the next 3 years.
Right now, it's opening its latest arena, an awesome new music stadium in Manchester, UK, called Co-op Live.
So here now to talk about how Oakview Group is innovating in the space, we welcome the chairman and CEO of Oakview Group, Tim Lywicki. Tim, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Glad to catch up with the two of you.
I know you're in Manchester getting ready for the opening of Co-op Live, which is an indoor arena that's due to open this month. It's going to have the largest maximum capacity of any indoor arena in the UK, so greater than the existing Manchester Arena, which is just under 2 miles away. Tell us a little bit about what it's going to look like when it does open and what kind of musical acts and other programming you have in mind?
So our bet as a company when we started roughly, I don't know, 8 years now it's been, is we looked at where there was a gap and a need for new venues. So we figured out Seattle and Climate Pledge Arena, which is now home to the Kraken and hopefully one day home to an NBA team. We're in Austin, Texas, on the campus of the University of Texas, where the men's and women's basketball team played, Moody Center. We're partners with the Islanders on UBS Arena out in New York. And so we've done a pretty good job of trying to figure out growth in the sports industry, growth in the live entertainment industry in the U.S. But now we're really focused on what we think is going to be a absolute explosion of new stadiums and new arenas internationally. We think you're going to see 150 to 200 million of new buildings here in the next 6 months announced in Europe and the UK on the arena front, just with investments. And I think from a overall international investment standpoint, you'll see $150 billion spent on stadiums and arenas worldwide here in the next less than 10 years. So key to this is obviously UK, Europe. And we wanted to build a world-class arena that we can then bring everyone into, not just the people in Manchester, but people from around the world, other municipalities, other partners, other developers, so they could see the future of sports and entertainment. Yep. That's what Co-op Live is. It's the most futuristic, technologically advanced, acoustically perfect arena ever built. And although its principle will be 100-plus nights of music, you're going to see some of the biggest sporting events in the world that are indoors now begin to have a home in Europe and the UK, where the economics of the building and the way the building has been designed can give them the ability to maximize revenue off of a manifest. Right. That's the key, is you want to go to these big sporting events and allow them to ultimately come in and do the kind of gates they do in New York or Los Angeles.
Right.
And so that's kind of the future. And this is the first place that ultimately is going to tackle that. And we spent, by the way, more money than anyone's ever spent on an arena outside of the United States.
Well, I mean, that is exactly where I want to go, Tim. I mean, look, I'd love to talk to you about the Decibel Club, the Bentley Record Room. I mean, it looks awesome. I can't wait to actually visit. But, you know, forget about Co-op Live for a minute. You told me that there are, what is it, 150, 250 million? I mean, $5 billion you've committed to developing new arenas over the next 3 years. Where is this money coming from? And more importantly, in this economy, you know, who's getting behind these investments? I mean, is it public? Is it public-private? I mean, talk to us a little bit about the financing and how that all comes together.
Yeah, well, this is a pretty good prototype. So we're spending roughly 375 million pounds. My developer probably is spending more than that, so I feel bad for them. Brexit and COVID and recession kind of hit them, and we had a guaranteed contract. So my guess is they're not at our budget. They're at a much higher budget,
right,
which is great. We get more for our money. But we were locked at 375. We have a 50-50 joint venture partnership with City Football Group, which Man City is probably the biggest team in the world right now. We're in a joint venture that includes Harry Styles as one of our investors. So we privatized all of this. We put in about 100 million pounds of capital between the three partners. Then we went out and locked in long-term financing, 25 years. Thank God we locked it in a few years ago, so that it's a very healthy what we'd be borrowing money for today. And we did it privately because we just get things done quicker that way. And the cities have better things to spend their money on. We get a pretty healthy rate of return. We've sold about 40 million pounds of contractually obligated income on an annual basis with suites, premium, and sponsorship. So we're going to do quite well here. We are getting about a 50% increase for artists on what they make when they normally come to the other arena in Manchester. So significant increase. We reduced the cost for them of load in, load out. We have 10 loading docks directly attached to the stage. You could do 10 trucks at one time. So their ability to bring their cost of production, load in, load out, down, take the manifest and get a 50% increase in the gate that they normally would make here, it's changed the game forever. And for us, it gives us 130 to 150 nights a year.
Right. It makes it easier to move between Clapton, the Killers, and Olivia Rodrigo all in May. I mean, Scarlett, look at what we're talking about here. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, what comes next and what you see demand looking like for new stadium build. I mean, are we talking, you know, venues that are in the, I don't know, 50,000? Are we talking, you know, huge 100,000 stadiums? I mean, you've got your, you know, kind of ear to the ground here. You know, what's the demand and, quite frankly, what's the supply look like?
I think you're going to see 40 new stadiums built in the Middle East, Europe, in the UK, mostly geared towards football clubs. I think you're going to see 40 arenas built by Co-op Live. And so if you do the simple math and the average arena is 500 million euros, you're talking about a significant amount of money that's going to be spent on arenas. But if you look at stadiums and you look at Riyadh and you look at Abu Dhabi and you look at what's happening in Champions League, Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, you're going to see a huge increase. And so what we're trying to do is reinvent the business and get ahead of it on premium, on hospitality, on sponsorship, on naming rights, on operations, on security, on sustainability. How does our company take this model, Co-op Live, get ahead of everybody else in the industry to operate better, know how to finance these things privately, know how to create the revenue streams, the contractually obligated income to pay for these things privately? That puts us at the forefront. There's a lot of people that will sell you services, but the reality is no one has built $5 billion worth of arenas and venues. So for that $150 billion of new business coming, we are way ahead of everybody because I could look all of those people in the eye and say, I am you and you are me. I have spent money like you have spent money. I've spent more money than anybody. I understand everything you need to do in order to be successful. And I have the same pressures and the tensions that you have. I see the world the same way you see the world. Everybody else is just for hire. So let me help you figure out how to go spend that $150 billion and what to do with that stadium or that arena once you've built it.
I'm curious from your perspective, Tim, when we talk about privately funded arenas, we've seen in recent weeks how voters in Kansas City have shot down the imposition of a new tax to fund a stadium revamp. We've also seen what happened in Arizona as well. Taxpayers are not buying this idea that providing subsidies to arenas is good, makes good economic sense for them. There's a pushback that we haven't seen in a while after they largely approved these things in the 80s, the 90s, and the aughts. When we talk about how things are privately funded, that doesn't really take into account like tax breaks that, for instance, the Giants Pac Bell Park, which was claimed to be the first privately financed ballpark, actually got later on from the government.
Well, I think the future is models like Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, where we the Kraken and OVG built that privately. We spent over $1 billion. The Islanders and OVG spent $1 billion on UBS Arena. Moody Center, we spent almost $400 million between us and Live Nation. And then we donated it back to the university, one of the largest gifts ever at the University of Texas. That has to be the future model, and people are going to have to figure it out, because what we're learning is municipalities and cities and states and governments, their money needs to be spent on education, on transportation, on safety, and on health. That means we have to figure out how to build entertainment facilities in a different model. Now, I'm actually a big believer that if you could get rebates on taxes that you generate off of the new jobs, the new facilities, that's an interesting way to take the load off of the taxpayers and simply take the pie of the new revenue being created and give the private sector a portion of that in order to avoid giving them direct tax subsidies. So we're all going to have to think outside the box, because the day of people writing checks for a free arena or stadium, that's not going
to
happen.
Now, talk to us about the size of a stadium and the cost to build your average stadium. Just in your mind, I just want to get a better feel for what the future market looks like.
Yeah, well, by the way, arenas could cost $2 or $3 billion.
Right.
Go sure. Ask Jim Dolan in the Sphere, or go ask my friend Steve Ballmer what he's spending on Intuit Dome. So figure, you know, $200 billion or $20 billion that we just talked about on arenas. And then if you look at stadiums, those 40 to 50 stadiums are going to average probably somewhere between $2 to $3 billion. That's going forward, as inflation still is a real factor here. So you're talking about another somewhere between 80 to 120 billion of stadiums.
And those are 50,000 plus, 60,000 plus. And you see right next door to us, Etihad Stadium's adding 6,000 new seats. They're adding a hotel. They're upgrading all their services.
Amazing.
AC Milan's building a new stadium. Chelsea's looking to build a new stadium. Birmingham's looking to build a new stadium. So you have all of the clubs in La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, and the Premier League, and they're all chasing each other, and they need these new economic streams. Then you have Riyadh, who's talking about 14 new stadiums just in Saudi Arabia, 14.
Remarkable.
And so these are big, expensive, SoFi kind of dreams that they all have, they all chase, and they all want to be Tottenham and what Daniel Levy built for the Spurs. That's the future of football, soccer going forward. And what you're going to see on arenas is they're all going to want what we built at Co-op Live, because it drives the economy for all of these municipalities, especially if we could form private-public partnerships and not put the burden on the taxpayers.
Tim Leiwicki, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Tim Leiwicki, chairman and CEO of Oakview Group, and of course, a man of very high stature in the sports industry. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We're here each and every week at the same time. For my colleague, Damian Sassauer, I'm Scarlett Fu.
Thanks for joining us. Tune in again next week for the latest on the stories moving big money in the world of sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.